Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Welcome to Fireteam Chat, IGN's Destiny show. Thank you so much for joining us. Here with me today is Fran Mirabella.
Hey, Guardians.
CJ Gibson.
What's up?
You introduced Fran first.
I know.
Threw me off.
What's happening?
Yeah. It's
his hair
today.
Yeah. It is his hair.
It is.
We're recording a little early this week because we have a big house party. We have a bunch of guests coming to the IGN offices tomorrow. Fran, if people want to join us and they happen to be in the San Francisco area...
Yeah.
When and where?
Last minute. This weekend is Saturday. I believe tickets are actually sold out, though, but you can double check. It's the 20th, 20 years of gaming celebration. It's an IGN 20th anniversary on top of it. You see what we did there. But 20 years of gaming with Alienware as well. So anyway, we have that going on this Saturday, but we're doing meet and greet here at IGN on the Friday before it, which is probably right around when you're listening to this. But, yeah, if you're in San Francisco this weekend, hit us up. Hit us up on Twitter. We're around. Maybe we, you can come by the show. So,
yeah. A few things I want to call out. I'm sorry I talk over people all the time to everybody listening. Yeah. And I'm sorry I don't like certain sounds of weapons.
Mostly from the dentist.
I got a lot of guff for that.
Sounds of weapons? I didn't catch this at all.
Oh, this is dentist comment about all the new Iron
Man weapons.
A lot of people like the banner
sounds. They were upset. They were upset. It's just the reload.
Yeah.
It's like...
Really?
And
because I was like, who is your dentist? Now I remember.
Anyway, I'm sorry for having an opinion. We have a lot of opinions on this show.
We do.
Here's what we're going to talk about this week. There's no update, so we wanted to kind of...
Well, when we're recording, there's no update.
Correct.
You're listening, there might be.
Yeah. So for right now, though, we kind of wanted to take a look back at Rise of Iron as a whole and talk about the stuff they really, really nailed and got right and the stuff that we think they could improve and how they could improve it. So let's start with what I think was their biggest success, and they're still teasing these today, actually. There's a new hidden Easter egg in one of the multiplayer maps, Last Exit.
I heard about this.
But it's the secrets. The secrets were so good this time.
They were good.
You know, we had Sleeper Simulant, which was kind of interesting last year, but man, they knocked it out of the park with that Outbreak Prime secret.
Yeah.
I thought it was super complex. I'd be curious, is that the only secret you're talking about?
Well, that is definitely my favorite secret that we've discovered thus far. And it was just so much fun finding out the puzzle and Reddit going crazy with all the posts.
I really loved the complexity of that quest. You know, going back to Taken King, we always talked about the Black Spindle quest a lot. That was just a cool, like, discovery on a daily, and you got an awesome reward for it. This was a discovery out of the raid, so I think they did a great job at expanding on it. But what I was getting at is, there's maybe still more to come, but there actually were, there were a lot of exotic quests in Taken King, or a number of them anyway. You know, there were the swords, there was Chaperone, there was Black Spindle, Sleeper Simulant. There's not as much that I'm aware of right now in Rise of Iron.
Yeah, so it's early. I mean, there could be some other things coming out in the next few
months. There are Storm, but...
Yeah. Yeah. So there's Thorn, which is unlocked by turning in.
And there's Kvostov. That's true. I guess I'm exaggerating a bit.
So, like, we figured out Kvostov and Gjallarhorn pretty quick, how to get those weapons. But those quests are also really special. They harken back to early Destiny, vanilla Destiny sometimes. Mm-hmm. Kvostov has a very, very touching moment. And, like, they just reminded me, man, like, I forgot about, like, vanilla Destiny and, like, those things that they allude to in those missions. And they were really, really special. Outbreak Prime was special because it was kind of a secret and a hidden, and us coming together as a community, and well, basically Reddit coming together as a community, and then
and
we
Datto
all kind of solved it
team.
Together. Yeah. The reason I think it was so special to me is because as I was solving it, it was literally as Datto was solving it.
Yeah.
So Datto solved it, and we were all freaking out on stream, like they're freaking out in the room behind us right now. Yeah. They're playing some wrestling, I think.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, we have a Let's Play room right behind us.
Yeah. Really, yeah.
Showroom. So.
But that's about the sound I was making when I found it. I just remember, oh my God, it's opening! And wow, like that's a hard emotion to replicate.
Yeah, I was already lying in bed at like midnight in Pacific time when it was happening. And so I felt the excitement for sure. But I was like, man, I got to go to bed. Like, I can't. I really wanted to be a part of it, but I'm like, I can't go back into the raid, get these chests, start doing math.
Yeah.
Like, no, thank you. So on that end, I wish that I got to be a little more part of it. But you were able to. That was really cool. Yeah. You stayed up till like 4 a.m. that night, I think. So.
Well, so that night, I'm literally at the doorway ready to transition to the next part. And Xavier's like, hey, I think Datto just solved it. And I'm like, everybody stop. We're not moving.
I was about to go to sleep, and I remember actually watching your stream. Because every night before I, you know, for whatever reason, I just kind of check out FM3 and Destiny just to see what's up. And then, you were doing that. And I was like, oh, this is very cool. Yeah. And did we play that night or the next night? Because I think I got into with you in a raid the next night.
Yeah,
actually,
probably the next
after
night.
You did it the first time. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool. Yeah.
But maybe... in fact, I have not. I have been so busy. As much of Rise of Iron as I've already played, all the raids, all the level grinding, the Nightfalls, etc. I mean, I haven't finished Outbreak Prime yet. I got sort of halfway through. I'm almost done, basically.
Yeah,
but yeah, part of it was, dang, everybody else already has it. I'll just get in a little bit.
Yeah.
Doing trials and whatnot, getting the right gear, getting my tier 12 rolls and stuff like that. tell folks a little bit about what I actually don't know the Kvostov quest yet. I haven't looked into it. Part of it is I have been saving those to do, and I don't want to spoil them as much as I can avoid it. Mm-hmm. So, like, roughly speaking, what makes them special?
So Kvostov sends you back to a lot of the original locations from Vanilla Destiny to collect parts of the gun, and you get all these pages that talk about the gun so you can read more about it in the grimoire for fans.
It's mostly
of the grimoire.
Like environmental, like, oh, yeah. I remember walking through the tunnel with the fan and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
And they actually, the ghost will actually talk to you and recall moments from early Destiny and finding those weapons.
Yeah.
And there's a very – I don't want to ruin it because there's a really touching moment at the end of the Kvostov quest where it's just some dialogue.
Right,
I was like, oh, man.
Right.
Like, I've been playing this game so long, and like it really made me feel like – I don't know. It made me weirdly feel like I'm a part of this world, I've been in for 2-3 years now.
Yeah, that's
and
cool.
I just really liked it. Let us know what you thought of the Kvostov quest in the comments below. Was it junk, or did you feel the same emotions I did?
So this one's sentimental.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we have Outbreak Prime, which is for a very awesome piece of gear, dropping at 390 right now still. And, like, yeah, you get chests in the raid. You have to solve some of these, like, server things to get these chests and looking at monitors and blah, blah, blah. And then you go on and you got to start solving these other things on top of it.
Yeah.
That seemed to be a lot more complex versus sentimental, right?
Yeah. So the Outbreak Prime quest, for me, that was just about the community really coming together and solving something. Mm-hmm. Datto was the one that really pushed us past that stopgap that everybody had hit and solved, like, how to start the puzzle.
Yeah.
And once that happened, like, everybody jumped on it. You know, and
the rest of it started to be more straightforward. Then it was a race.
Yeah.
They were pretty cool with just the launch of that whole Rise of Iron thing as well, with that infected thing. Like, that was really neat to see that transpire as well, too. Because even, you know, it's funny looking back at our gameplay, we have those elements of playing on the Let's Play with, you know, all the swarming viruses and just – because was that a direct, like, result of that Outbreak Prime, right? Like, is that – like, some of the details were transmission information that they were giving throughout that.
Wait, so the virus that we got right before the launch of Rise of Iron, that was actually more about just giving us a way to expand the story. And we were sent to this website, and it kind of told the story of SIVA and what SIVA was
right.
and how it was created and built.
So there was no direct correlations between that and, like, the actual Outbreak Prime.
I don't think it was meant to be as big as it got. Okay. Like, people, like, got all five and everything, and they were really excited about it. But it turned out just to be a way to add more dialogue.
Right. And, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which was really cool. And, I mean, so that's what I was wondering. Do you think that that's it? Like, do you think that potentially there might be something that comes of this later on? It seemed odd that there was, like, stuff built into the game.
I think it was a fast way to, you know, honestly, just use some particle effects and just get a little bit of talking about
it. But it is neat. It's neat that we have that footage. Like, everybody's always playing, you know, PvP modes and private matches. It was cool to have some of that element of just it's another moment in, like, the Destiny, you know, three-year span that you have gameplay of and, you know, videos. And so that's kind of cool.
Meanwhile, what's the Thorn quest like, roughly?
I can't get it.
You haven't? Oh, okay. You can't.
Yeah, Thorn I would actually put in the bad category because it's so randomized. I like it's not like a randomized drop that you get from a chest or just a quest that you get bounties. From a chest. It's literally do the Archon's Forge bounties, which are awful, by the way. Archon's Forge is on my list of bad for sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the bounties tied to the Thorn quest are tied to the Archon's Forge quest. Now, Reddit does say that you can get the Thorn quest through Vanguard bounties. I have turned in over 30 Vanguard bounties, no Thorn quest. And I was streaming the other day, and I asked, "Stream this. How did you get your Thorn quest?" Every single person got it through the Archon's Forge bounties.
Okay.
So I don't have a large enough test case to disprove that you can get it through the Vanguard bounties. And also, there's a question: did you have Thorn year one when you got your Thorn quest? Maybe there's a bug there or something where you can get it through your Vanguard if you didn't get Thorn in year one. I don't know.
I doubt it would be that, but yeah.
Do you know of anybody who's potentially gotten it through Crucible bounties as well? Because you got some of those quests either way, Vanguard or Crucible, once you just, like, cashed them in,
On chat that night, I had 20 responses, and 20 out of 20 said I got it from Archon's Forge bounties.
Interesting.
The ones you get from Shiro.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So,
I'm not able to totally prove that.
Yeah, and you haven't been able to do the quest yet. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So. And I can't get the quest. Have either of you guys?
No,
I'm not.
No, and I'm pretty religious at, like, grinding a Crucible bounty. So for whatever reason,
it's not coming from there,
or it hasn't dropped for me. So.
so the reason Archon's Forge is bad, and especially back as it's tied to these Shiro bounties, is you can't buy the Siva offering you need to work on your weekly quests. It's totally a random drop. You can't even get a crew together to go into Archon's Forge and keep the cycle going. Like, when you go in there, you hope you get, like, two blueberries who are waiting for the drop. They improved it a little bit where they added missions that you can do, specifically the quarantine missions. And you can do one of those, and it's guaranteed a drop. So you can go out, get one drop, and then go in with your crew and get it. I just feel like Archon's Forge is such a miss, and I really, really hope they patch it. Because going back and playing Court of Oryx, I'm like, man, this is fun.
Yeah.
Like, even
though
this is
fast. It was very, like, instant. Yeah. Fast to get to. Just there was always something going on for the most part, and you always had the right, the reciprocal rune or whatever to get it started. Where getting an offering, can be a bit of a pain.
Yeah.
So
The drops are really good in Archon's Forge. They drop at a higher light level, and I think this might kind of correlate with one of their other strategies. I'll let you finish though before I bring it up.
No, I was just gonna say with Court of Oryx, it was really weird that. What's that? I can't remember. It was a quest where it's not a quest, but with Venus when I think it was. They did the Prison of Elders launch where you'd go in and out to get the keys. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Where
the treasure keys.
The treasures?
Uh-huh. Well, like you had to do the Queen's bounties to get keys. Remember, you had to get the chest. That's what you're talking about.
And you left the environment and came back in. So a lot of people are doing that for Archon's Forge, where when you do that, there's a part where when you walk out of that little tunnel and it kind of bridges into loads into the next piece, you just kind of wait there for a little bit.
Oh, really?
And then go back, and then you just hope it kind of randomly populates at a different, you know, instance with other people there. So I've done that a few times, and that's worked because then –
interesting.
You get an offering that somebody else has done.
Yeah.
You get a key, you get in.
Doesn't
and hopefully,
sound right.
No, it's one of those things where you're right. Like, it seems like that should not be the way to try to keep, you know, a match going in Archon's Forge.
Yeah.
Like, it's
Archon's Forge is it's not quite what I thought it would be. It's funny that it sounds almost lazy, but it's kind of far away in the Plague Islands.
Oh, it's super far.
Like, why do you make me get – I like at first going there, but after that, like, just drop me straight into Archon's Forge, like Prison of Elders. Like, I don't like that, you know, say, that's
you
what
have to run to
with.
Prison also.
But it's like, it's very
close. Oh, not prison.
No,
sorry.
Court. But I was about to say, that's so close on the dread. Mm-hmm. It's like literally right.
You jump Sparrow, and it feels like it's very fast to get to still.
Like for me, Archon's Forge, I barely go there. It's a, it's okay in terms of the gameplay. I think it's what I would expected it to be. we also always talked about it as a – I thought it would be something maybe to get you past, yeah, call it 365, 370.
Right.
Which for me, you know, I'm well past now at 385, and it's like
–
I have no reason to go back there. Yeah. Just saying.
But yeah, if there's,
yeah,
if there's not certain things, yeah, attached to it, you're right. You do not go there hardly at all anymore, except for those few bounties or if there's things that you have to do in them.
It's not the worst.
I hate going there. Yeah. But one good thing that comes out of it is you get a ton of drops, but you get green and blue drops that push out the good drops if your inventory is full.
Postmaster,
and it's just like I get so many drops in Archon's Forge that my Postmaster is full in seconds, and I clear my inventory regularly. It's just like, oh, your inventory is full again, and you lost four of those 385s.
That happens in the raid, too.
Yeah.
We have a serious Postmaster problem now, because, I mean, I love that you're getting a lot of engrams and stuff, but, like, you almost need those to, like, go to the Cryptarch. Like, get rid of the mechanic of picking them up at the Postmaster and taking them. Just put all of your stuff with the Cryptarch, and when you go there, boom, 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 you just go through it all. Like, why do you even have to carry him around?
It's the same concept that they had, again, year one with bounties. It's like, why did I have to – because didn't you initially have to go to –
you know, back to the tower to pick them up.
Back to pick them up, but then to cash them
in. And to
cash
them in, sorry. Yeah,
and then they readjusted it so you could actually just cash them in your menu, which that'd be nice. Yeah. So if you had that ability
– for the Cryptarch or what – yeah.
To do it just in the world, potentially – you were sitting on one,
that
or...
That sounds like a fine choice.
Great idea, Guardian.
Fine choice, Guardian.
But yeah,
always a great conversation.
Yep. So it's possible, maybe, because they did, you know, they did evolve that bounty process, you know, a lot.
Needs work.
Speaking of engrams, this is a good transition. They did this strategy this time where they basically throttled purple engrams, and I think that's one of the worst choices they've ever made, in my opinion. I understand blues being capped. That makes sense. The idea that they throttled purple engram drops so that we would farm Omnigold, which they ended up patching, and we get to a certain light level, but then the purples only decrypt up to 365 is totally bizarre to me, and I don't get it. They said it was a design compromise. It just doesn't make any sense.
But wait, it was like that before, right, with the 280s. Like, they were 280. So you had a similar thing going on before. I think
20 light levels lower than the highest gear that you can get. Like that.
Yeah. But I mean, it was like that before with 280, right? The difference here, I think you're really, that resonates is that the grind after 365 is so incremental.
Right.
You know? Like I'd have to go back and think about where I got my first 300s and 310s from the raid, but like, it was a grind back then too, but I would agree, especially for a DLC of this nature, just putting legendary engrams aside, there's way too much of a point of entry for people to like grind up just to get to 365. And then from 365 to 370, just to honestly get into the raid, oh, it was way too much.
They've identified a problem with artifacts and ghosts. That definitely needs to be addressed.
Yeah, super. And same problem we had before. It was I don't know if it was the class. No, it was the artifacts and ghosts. It was the same
problem.
Yeah,
you couldn't get it.
And bonds as well. They were super rare. Or sorry, class items.
Yeah.
They were super rare. The grind is just too much. Like, that's the one part of this I don't get. Part of it is special. We have a big part of the community that is still talking about they're finally ready for the raid.
Yeah.
Because guess what? They only have, like, maybe 5 hours on a weekend to play.
I basically didn't sleep those 3 days to get ready for the raid.
And
I was a mess when I came in and did that raid. We finished 90th, by the way. I don't think I ever said that on
the
air.
Top 100.
Yeah.
That's so awesome, dude.
Nice, man. Congrats.
But, the grind's too much, and that's one philosophy I just don't quite get. Part of it's earning it, and there is a special factor, but I have a hard time understanding, like, just letting you play the story part out and then moving on to try to get in the raid, that gap is huge.
Yeah.
So, like, we had – actually, Lucy O'Brien had done an article here. She was a big Lapse player from, like, the beginning of the year one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then her friends kept trying to get her to play. She's like, okay, I'll give it a shot. And she did, like, over a weekend, got the Spark of Light, blah, blah, blah. But, like, a lot of what she talks about is they had to explain all these new currencies and stuff. And then on top of it, it was, like, this grind just to get to this next thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's just too big of a gap.
Yeah. I mean, these
I games, don't understand it.
These games are about the grind. Specifically, what I'm trying to discuss is the fact that they admit that they throttled engrams up to 365. They said it's a trade-off. I don't really understand clearly what trade-off was made exactly. And that once hard mode releases, that is going to change. So to me, it was a way to elongate the period of time that it takes you to get to 385 to do hard mode.
Right.
And it's very bizarre to me that they would make this choice. It's like, so you basically made purple engrams less desirable, and that's not what I should be experiencing.
I'm trying to think of when the last time I actually had a purple engram drop just in the environment. Like, oh, I can't
actually, I get them a lot, actually.
I don't actually get
really?
Them ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying
raid.
To think. Well, besides the raid. But mm-hmm. that's what I mean. Like, if you're not doing the raid, just playing the game. Mm-hmm.
My like, blues turn into purple all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, my blues turn into purple. Yeah. But again, it's rare that you just get
really?
A purple engram. Like, it feels like if you get a blue, it should maybe decode to that. But then if you get a purple engram, it should be higher.
Not
you know,
opening enough
like
loot
that.
Chests up, man, and
maybe.
All that type of
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I would open more loot chests if I could get skeleton keys,
yeah.
which have a terrible drop rate.
I haven't been playing mm-hmm. strikes, and that's where you get them, but I have only had the skeleton. Honestly, I've only had the skeleton key you're given.
From the quest.
I haven't run a ton of strikes to go off and try to find these. And well, there's no need to either.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
you know.
After you're of the.
So to your point, Dustin, what I would say is I don't understand, yeah, why engrams were really like one – this is what bothers me. They were very clearly one light level basically above your – well, your level that you're at. Mm-hmm. But it made it so hard. Like
so
meaning,
it's like tick, tick,
yeah,
tick,
like
tick,
why
tick,
couldn't
tick,
I be at 350? And yeah, you get a legendary engram and then – because even then it wouldn't drop at 365.
No,
just
drop
let it drop at 365.
Yeah.
That I would have been more okay with. But then even then, I think to your point, they said it a little wrong because why not just make it 370? Get you up to 370 for the raid. Mm-hmm. Then I could see, okay, you want to limit us from getting to 380 to be ready for this 385 raid. Maybe that. But that's what I did. From getting to blue, all the way to 365, there's so few ways to do that. There's no way to do it quickly mm-hmm. other than
yeah.
exotic engrams and saving up stuff. So yeah. I don't support it at all. If I couldn't have ground out Omnigul, and thankfully I did, which I didn't enjoy – but if I didn't do that, I would have been really mad.
Yeah.
So
yeah, motes of light and just
I don't like wasting
in.
Time
yeah.
doing stuff that's not rewarding, and that's what I always say about Destiny. It is so much fun when you are rewarded, when you don't feel like you're wasting your time. As soon as you do, and a little bit of a grind's okay, but as soon as you're just grinding thoughtlessly, like when we used to farm spin metal and stuff, like forget it, man.
Yeah.
Now it's into bad territory.
Have you bought lots of heavy synth at Xur? I mean, that's super fun.
Oh yeah,
five.
Why does that take 10 seconds?
It's
to
three
buy?
At a time.
Yeah, I know. I mean, again, I've dismantled passage coins.
So let's bring it back for just a second, back into the positive, because we'll get back to a few of the critiques that we have, but we've been
jerk.
Pretty critical. So let's talk about the raid and.
Awesome.
Why it's fantastic. We've done this before on the show, but just to be clear, I absolutely love the raid. I now have a crew that I run with every Tuesday at 8 on twitch.tv/thedestin channel, and we can do three runs in about 3 hours. That includes doing the Outbreak Prime quest.
Yeah, grab
so
the
we,
chest.
So
it, yeah.
we grab every chest, and we do the Outbreak Prime quest, and we can finish the raid in 57 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a pretty good time investment. If we rush through it and only grab the chest, it's 50 minutes or less.
Yeah.
We were also all warlocks that round, so we're really bad at jumping.
Slow.
Yeah, it was a little slower. But I love the raid. I love the mechanics. I can't wait to see what hard mode's going to offer. I think it's definitely going to be more challenging. I'm not sure what they're going to throw at us, but...
Is that
like
a SIVA joke? SIVA charge joke?
Oh.
Fran, you haven't talked about it before. I've talked about how I love the visuals. I like how it's like almost like a Borg mentality with
mm-hmm.
like this boss that has allowed himself to be augmented to mm-hmm. the point he's unrecognizable.
Mm-hmm.
What do you love about the raid?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I've now played it enough, like a half dozen times maybe. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, that's all because I've been so busy, but enough to wrap my head around it. And for me, it's the tightest raid, and I think I said this before on the show, like it's intuitive because everything kind of ties together. The mm-hmm. monitors are throughout, the SIVA charges are mm-hmm. throughout. So you get little hints of what to do where like Taken King was really cool, but it was like this thing was quite a bit different from this other thing like Golgoroth versus, you know, the War Priest. And you really had to figure out each of those puzzles almost on their own.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple things that overlap, but not really. So I thought they did a really good job there. Yeah, visually it is beautiful. I think everybody talks about, you know, when you go down that one big mm-hmm. slope. I don't want to spoil it for anyone. In the depths, it gets really cool. And so, yeah, it's the tightest raid for me. I'm not sure it's my absolute favorite yet, but I'm still thinking on that. And I mm-hmm. pause because it is so intuitive that – I don't know. Now I feel like, you know, when you do the beginning part and the end part, they're kind of similar. And even the end has that. It's like they're both kind of the same. And so, right, it's a half full, half empty conversation where it's like, well, it's awesome because it's intuitive and you're giving hints and I don't have to like pull it out of thin air. On the other side, like the very end, especially back to back, you basically do the same thing twice. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It is a great raid though. I mean, I'm not knocking it at all, but I don't know that it's my absolute favorite. The King's Fall raid is really cool.
It is. It is pretty cool.
It's just convoluted.
Talking about one moment I really like from this current raid, the Death Zamboni, the more I think about that sequence and how you smash through those walls and how you have to kind of deal with the different waves of enemies, carrying the parts is an interesting mechanic, but once you complete it and that Death Zamboni falls off the ledge and then splashes into the water, like just gameplay-wise, that is a pretty incredible feat.
It's cool, yeah.
From a gameplay standard because, like, I can't think of a sequence where, like, you ride a thing and then it falls off a cliff and then falls into the water
into the
and disappears
part,
and it transitions you into the next part. Mm-hmm. It's really an impressive feat that they managed to make all that kind of work together and function. Granted, the FPS does dip at certain points, but they're addressing that. They said they're addressing that. And then the final boss is great. The intro's okay. I mean, it's just grab the sparks, but all intros are kind of like that. It's like, here's the first thing you have to do to get used to the idea as working in small groups as a team, as a larger team. Mm-hmm. So,
it's funny. I kind of said the same thing last week when we were talking. Like, the mechanics for the raid seemed like all the same. They kind of seem rehashed from the beginning to the end. I still like it. It feels like a fun raid, but yeah, it was definitely not as difficult as, you know, the Taken King where I remember the first time we played through it, we had no idea what to do, like the red and blue room before War Priest.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, even after you got that, the coordination to actually do that, that was the most frustrating piece of that raid, I think, still to this day.
Yeah.
Like, there's other things with it, but...
Yeah, and that's why I still give pause, because, like, you put someone in that situation who's never done... It's just... It really is convoluted. And so I'm not saying...
King's Fall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's the right way to do it. I really do like this raid. Actually, it's the smartest raid. Mm-hmm. I will absolutely say
it's fun.
It is the smartest raid.
The mechanics are fun, too.
It's the prettiest looking raid. I love the boss design. I mean, everyone by now knows I'm a big Metroid Prime fan. And it has tones
he's
of that
mother
going
brand.
On. Yeah, it's got all those tones. It's a really cool design on the boss. And actually, I like that everybody's pretty active and working together at all times, and you never really get siloed off, which sometimes happened in the other raids. So...
It is weird when Samus and Star Fox show up and kill the boss for you.
I
knew you would like that. Yeah. And then you
play
Mario Kart.
After the Death Zamboni, there's that R-Wing mission and you fly into the cave. That was unexpected.
But. Yeah, definitely.
I will say this just real quick on the concept raids. Crota still was – I had this conversation with somebody else. Like, how would you rank them? It's like you're now 1-4. It's like I still think Vault, for what it was really, you know, the best raid. Mm-hmm. Length and experience and just what it was at the time. And I think that's the piece of the puzzle when you factor it in. It's hard because it was, like, new and it was Destiny and it was unknown. The Crota raid was still – it's an odd raid. Like, when you play it again – I just tried it, like, a couple weeks ago. It's weird, but some of my best memories were in that raid because you kind of
– Well, that was our heyday back then, though.
It was.
Things were being fixed.
Right. And you're, like, there was so much,
Black
like,
Hammer.
Anticipation. Yeah, there's all these new weapons, Icebreaker, and there was still some of those things in the game. So now it's weird when you take Icebreaker out, when you change a lot of the meta, and then you go back to it, you're kind of like – oh, well, this was neat because this was available, and then it wasn't, and then like Gjallarhorn was there. Now it's kind of nerfed, and it's not as important. Mm-hmm. So some of those details into the weapons also play into how you feel about the raid, too. Right?
Definitely,
so,
your weapon availability.
Yeah, it's different.
Changes. But, I do think it's the smartest raid by far, but... I guess
I'm watching where you're ranking it. Yeah.
It's very hard. You know what? The truth is, here's the reason I'm so turned. You're like, how could you not know by now? And I'm sure some people are like, you're an idiot. That's amazing. I freaking love it. I get it. I usually, in moments like this, I need to write it down to like fully understand
what do we
how
got?
I'm thinking about it. So
Vault, Dark Below, King's Fall,
and Wrath,
Wrath of the Machine.
Yeah.
For me, Vault and Wrath are my favorites. I like Wrath more right now because I haven't played it that much, I think. And I played Vault so much that I think I'm a little burnt out on it, so it's hard for me to have that same enthusiasm about it. But those two are probably still my two favorites. And then I don't like King's Fall that much.
Really?
I find it super frustrating.
It's tough. That's what I mean. It's convoluted. Yeah. You don't have people that know what they're doing. Yeah. Once you do know, it's kind of cool. But,
and convoluted. Dark Below, like, it had great weapon drops and everything, but I have no desire to go back to whatever.
Yeah.
I remember when I got Hawkmoon, I said, hey, I never have to play this again.
Right, at Crota. I remember that, too, when you beat that at the end. You're all excited.
I can just do stuff for fun. Remember when we had fun, guys?
Yeah, my wheels are still spinning.
It's an efficiency.
I need to play him. It's the prettiest raid, the smartest raid. It actually might be my favorite raid. That's where I'm torn between that and King's Fall. Actually, Vault, no, because I love Vault. Like, sentimentally, it's just so cool.
It's beautiful,
It's awesome. Yeah, I really love the environment. It's just really cool. But, you know, when you think about it, like, the opening is actually kind of dumb. Like, right, you're just shooting Praetorians on these plates. And, yeah, I mean, it's not that interesting compared to the opening of Wrath, right?
Yeah, just raid in it.
It's just combined some good mechanics, right?
It's pretty similar, actually. Three different points.
But
you
the
open
mechanics,
them all.
That's
King's Fall,
difference.
Same idea.
Yeah, but again, the mechanics are different in the opening. Everybody's busy in teams of two, actually. And if you look at that, they do a lot of that where it's always keeping two teams one team of two very busy and working together.
You're right. In this game, you collect power and slam it. In King's Fall, you collect orbs and slam it. It's way different.
No, in the opening
similar.
Vault,
it's two
you're just
two.
Shooting Praetorians, man. I mean,
and in Vault, you hold a point and you slam the Praetorians. It's very different.
Yeah, it's
I'm egging you on a little bit.
No, well, I'm actually, I'm like, wait, am I forgetting the opening? Like, no, you just keep them from, like, crowding the plates or whatever, and that's it.
But you're always teams of two, basically divided into, like, three sections of the map.
You are.
So the one that was very different was the Dark Below.
Yeah, way different. And when you play it now, you realize how different it was. Yeah. Like, even, you need, I mean, the problem is, I think I played that the first probably 3 months and cheese the bridge part, like the second part. Hey, let's one person jump over, you know, the sword or whatever. And then
did you land cable the boss?
Yes. That was my first time beating Crota.
I've done it,
and we didn't actually. The guy who left couldn't get back in, so we all just beat it like with five. And I was like, "Is this how you're supposed to do it? All right, pull your internet cable now." What? Can we get him back in? No, let's just kill him. It's like, that was insane. That was my first time actually beating Crota.
But people were doing that because it was bugged.
No,
that
because you couldn't get to light level. The difference between level 30 and 32 was huge.
It was crazy.
You just couldn't do it.
What if CJ thought it was like an Eternal Darkness thing where you actually had to press the reset button?
Yeah, exactly.
See you later, CJ. Did you guys beat it? I took one for the team. That was so crazy. So all those moments, like looking back, that was a really weird raid, and almost so between that second part and the end, that was my first experience beating the raid where I actually literally cheesing it to the point of breaking the game, which is kind of odd, but it was funny. That's right.
I like the hordes, and actually of Crota's End, like, I like that the opening is pretty cool.
The lamp and the scary
factor of getting, like, left behind, and
But
again, it was pretty tough, especially at the light levels and stuff you were working at back then.
So here's the question, because I think now what you're getting to is, it sounds like an efficiency thing, because, like, you're saying you like this other raid because it's fast and you can do it. The mechanics are fun.
You can do them all in, like, about 45 minutes to an hour.
King's Fall, not so much.
Yeah, you can.
King's Fall still takes a while. Well, okay. Sorry, the one and done crew. I apologize. What if everything landed and dropped at the new higher light level?
Then, for all the raids.
For all the raids.
You're going to go back.
And now, all of a sudden, you love Dark Below because you can beat it in 35 minutes.
With two people.
With a couple of people.
Well, new light level.
Try. But that's the thing. I think that...
If you pull the lane.
Yeah, right now...
It doesn't work.
You get a golden gun. No, you're... so now it's turning an efficiency thing because you've played it, and now you're going, okay, I want to maximize my light. I want to get my drops. And that's the fastest way to do it right now. But say you could get max level from all the raids, which one would you play?
The most efficient one, which is probably Wrath of the Machine. The drops are still faster.
Right.
You get more drops quicker from Wrath.
Right.
So,
but Dark Below
is fairly quick.
It's pretty fast.
I can't do it as fast as you, though. Dark Below still takes me about an hour, and it's all in darkness. Like, you can't see anything for most of it. I would rather do Wrath right now, but it's also newer, and I haven't ran it 40 times.
Right.
You know. I mean, I play the raids for fun, ideally. You know, yes, you're always grinding for gear, but when I'm having this conversation right now, it's not based on efficiency. It's based on the fun.
Okay.
And yet, honestly, Wrath of the Machine and King's Fall are the two that are sort of neck and neck. Again, one's sort of convoluted. This other one's super smart and clean. Everybody's involved, and I'm I don't know. I kind of want to go back and play King's Fall, be quite honest. Because I haven't – let me just ask you that. Have you played King's Fall since you've done Wrath of the Machine?
No, I haven't had time.
It gives you a different perspective. Yeah. It's like you know, having some amazing new food and going back and trying something similar that you – you know,
food.
It changes your perspective.
Yeah.
So I'd like to do that.
Do you guys have one more positive thing before we're actually getting close to time? Do you guys have any other positives that you want to talk about that aren't associated with the raid?
I mean –
before we go.
We talked about it last week. I mean, Banner was handled
Banner
really
was
well
fantastic.
It was really good.
Lots the
of
new
drops.
Banner is awesome.
Yeah.
Trials weapons, awesome.
Really good.
Yes.
Iron Banner weapons, awesome. Mm-hmm. Not the sound.
But even not even the weapon.
There it is.
Not the weapons were great overall, but it was just the allowing you to get so many drops and not being stingy. That has been the theme of this conversation, actually.
Yeah.
That's why Banner, I thought, was like awesome. Hop in, play PvP, get tons of drops.
Yeah.
Just keeps dropping, and it doesn't take forever.
There's that meme that Destiny gives you one thing after 20 hours of playing. You know, Diablo, you're literally showered with loot. And I think the developers finally loosen up, just like, give them a ton of loot. But now they're running into resource problems where, like, all right, their postmaster's full, just push out those purples.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's other stuff they have to address. Now it's created new problems for the developer.
Yeah, my vault's a disaster.
Yeah.
My vault's always been a disaster.
I had 20 free slots in both my vaults, and I cleaned up my characters. I did the raid once. Everything's full again.
Yep.
And I'm just like, wow. Okay.
Raid blueprint. Raid kiosk.
Yeah. They do need that. Absolutely.
Like, Scott! He promised me.
Please.
He promised IGN.
Scott, been on the show, Scott.
Make it happen.
Come on, man. He said they're fixing vault and stuff.
Yeah, he said they're working on it.
Yeah.
Fixing was not the correct word. They're working on it.
And I will say, solution.
I think that with Iron Banner as well, because re-rolling your weapons, what was that actually called when you were able to do that in the
Twisting?
Re-rolling your weapons. No, I know. That's what we call it, but there's a specific name.
Sorry, Twist of Fate is what you can do on Exotic.
With an A.
Totally I know.
It's funny.
We call it re-rolling, but it's like there's a specific, like basically between Dark Below and King's Fall.
Well, it was Prison Velders, right?
Right, which you could like take your weapons and tune them to whatever you want, which you cannot do.
You can pay motes and some glimmer and
weapon parts and
re-roll.
All that stuff. Yeah, I appreciate now that it's almost back to the way it was, where the Iron Banner weapons drop different perks on each weapons, but the Trials gear are all the same. Raid gear, all the same as far as weapons and perks on the weapons.
The rolls.
The rolls. I like.
Not the stats.
Not the stats. Yeah. But I like that because then it doesn't feel like you're mishmashing trying to, like, you know, spend resources to get a weapon. You can play the game, get
reforge.
A drop. Yeah, reforge. Thank you.
That's
you, you can't reforge your weapon, but you have the ability to get a different drop on it in Iron Banner. I like that. I like the fact that the new raid now doesn't allow you to get different perks on your weapons. I thought that with that within the context of King's Fall was not good because I held on to a bunch of different things that had Cocoon or not or Firefly and not, and I was like, it kind of bugged me.
That is a very good point. I would rather have more drops and then I decide which one that I keep instead of, okay, I rerolled it 14 times. Yeah. All right, that's a pretty good roll. I'll keep it.
I mean, it was literally a problem for me, and I don't know, maybe some people can relate. I stood there sometimes for like 10 minutes just
rolling.
And then you had this like complex where you're like, oh, this one's really good.
Yeah.
And then you'd keep it and you're like, okay, I got a second one.
Yep.
You're sitting at the slot machine. You're going, what am I doing with my life?
They got rid of that
problem. I have a wife and kids.
Yes. You just turned 10. When did that happen? But that was weird. Like, so I do appreciate the fact that Iron Banner is now the only time that happens. And the raise is, I know you want to make the joke.
What's your favorite's name? Were you on his 10th birthday?
Stop that, Destin. Lies.
Were you just like, oh, sorry, I missed your birthday, but look at this gun I got.
Check out this sweet roll from... Yeah, that happens. Continue. But anyways, there's a bunch of good things I like about it. Iron Banner is really good. Trials is really good. Mm-hmm. And the map rotation, having, you know, supremacy in that mix. And private matches, we haven't really talked about that.
Yeah,
that is one of those weird things where...
That's actually not a Rise of Iron update. That is a Destiny update that's
right.
available to all Destiny owners through Taken King that was introduced before Rise of Iron's launch. So you can't actually include it with the launch of Rise of Iron. It was a very strange marketing decision for Bungie. They were smart.
Yeah.
They made it seem like it's a Rise of Iron update.
Right.
It's not a Rise of Iron update.
Well,
it is available to all players.
Yeah. But they made a strategic decision to not make it exclusive because you're just going to really piss people off. They're already mad that the dailies and the weeklies and all that is messed up. That's a different discussion, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we do need to wrap it up today.
We do need to wrap it up, but we all kind of 1v1'd each other, and we didn't actually talk about it.
Oh, interesting.
So that's the show, everybody.
Man.
Yes.
So I saw you lagged out.
I did.
That was the first round.
So that was the first round.
Oh, there was another round. I'm so curious to hear how it happened.
I will say it was a Plan C IS Luna match.
We did.
The Titans.
We Plan C versus Plan C.
It was really good. No. So I will say this. I did just edge you out by a few. It was the same as yours. It was neck and
really?
Neck right up.
I don't remember that, mine being that.
All right. Let's just fast track this. Right. These two won one match against me. Okay. Yeah, they won. They're just as good, and they won the match.
If we
and
won,
they're
though,
over here gloating.
I mean, it's
about
a ranking, so
well,
just as good. Isn't
statistical
an
rules
description.
I wouldn't bet on one stat.
I had to get a private match as a subtle transition in there, but I will say it's super.
Boot it up on this TV right now. We're finishing this.
It was fun, and for that reason alone, I'm really anticipating the next little bit because once some of these things start slowing down, like. You know, private matches and these custom game modes. We did it on the Let's Play stream, and it is fun. And I definitely see that that's where the next phase of Destiny is going once people start getting into that and
definitely.
Getting rid of some of this content.
Definitely.
So. I hope you're happy with yourself.
We got to wrap it up real quick, Fran. What was my game-winning kill again? I can't remember what move I used.
I actually don't remember your game-winning kill.
Oh, you don't? I do. It was a shoulder charge.
You did
charge. That's all we have. That's all we have time for this week, everybody.
Was that actually the last kill?
Yeah,
I was already
you.
So mad.
I just have the screenshot where Destin's like...
Yeah. Wait, were you my first 1v1, right, Destin?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
We were both on. We were both streaming, right?
Yeah.
And we said, let's play.
There was a sub. You got to give a shout out to the sub because I can't remember what you were like, I'll do it if there
no,
was
no, no,
a sub.
No, no, no. It was part of my crew
I
that I raid with. So I was supposed to play with Mikey. This is the guy I play with as part of our crew. But Cricket is sitting there, who you all heard his name by now. And he was, I'll go. So this is also why I was, forgetting about it. Mm-hmm. Because he stepped in while Mikey couldn't connect because it was having server problems. Mm-hmm. And that actually got me. I have a pretty huge reaction on camera on my Twitch stream. Click jumped in there and the first thing he did mm-hmm. was shoulder charge me. And I just didn't like even consider it. And he was being super quiet and then out of nowhere just and I was like, oh no, like got out of everything. And then he started trying to chase me. And then actually we were neck and neck for a while and he's really good. Mm-hmm. 1v1 changes the dynamic of PvP.
It's fun though. I will say like it it is fun. And even those
it
moments
is fun beating friends in 1v1. Right, Michael?
One
also,
match. Let's play. Michael and I haven't played.
It's
so.
It's a cool feeling because even knowing that you're on the mic listening and there's other people tuning in, I love watching the stream about 5 seconds behind. You're like, oh, and everybody's reacting in the background. You hear Destin and Fran just going.
I did have
they're
so
quiet.
Dude, I had one
of
the sickest Plan C shots against Destin though that I've ever had.
Like, when I was trying to shoulder charge you.
No, you were like up on the ledge and banner fall, and you were pretty far away, and I was just like tracking you, and I was surprised it hit you. You just melted, but some fun plays in that game. We will have to play again.
Definitely good memories. We should wrap it up, you guys, though. Thank you so much for joining us, and until next time, Guardians out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.